It was kind of a crazy time in the middle of the pandemic and everything. Things have only gotten more complex in the world. And I think that's the first thing, is to think about the backdrop of what we're dealing with. There's a term called VUCA, volatility, uncertainty, complexity, and ambiguity, that really pervades everything.
You're listening to Be That Lawyer, life-changing strategies and resources for growing a successful law practice. Each episode, your host, author, and lawyer coach, Steve Fritzen, will take a deeper dive, helping you grow your law practice in less time with greater results. Now, here's your host, Steve Fritzen.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Be That Lawyer. I am Steve Fritzen, your host. I hope you're having a lovely day today. And, you know, this show, as you guys all know by now, unless this is your first time listening, it's all about helping you to be that lawyer, someone who's confident, organized, and a skilled rainmaker. So what does that really mean? Well, it means that, you know, we have to look at things holistically. We have to look at, yes, business development and marketing. We have to look at health and wellness. We have to look at technology and AI and all the different elements that go into being successful as a lawyer, whether you're at a big firm or you're solo, doesn't really matter. There's things going on all around us. And you guys are going to be so happy that you joined me today. I've got a two-timer, if you will, Ken, who's waiting in the wings. And man, the first time we talked, Ken, wow, did we have a great conversation. I felt like you really gave everybody just some insights about the legal industry that they just weren't maybe getting kind of all in one shot. So good to have you back.
Hey, it's great to be here, Steve. It's a pleasure to be on your show and looking forward to having another great conversation.
Yeah, yeah. In a moment, I do want to just mention your quote of the show, which I love to do. This one confused me a little bit, so I'm looking forward to your explanation. And the quote is, you can do market research on a market that doesn't exist. And that's Clayton Christensen. So can you just tell me why you submitted that quote and kind of like, what does that mean?
Sure. It's, you know, the idea is that you cannot do market research on a market that doesn't exist. So oftentimes when you have new technologies, and let's just talk ChatGPT and all this AI, what is the addressable market? You can't ask questions of customers who have never used a product to understand and actually get good input as to where that market is going, because it doesn't exist yet. The same sort of thing like with Henry Ford, you know, there's a quote attributed to him about, if I would have listened to my customers, I would have built a faster horse, because they couldn't conceptualize what an automobile was and what he was trying to accomplish. That's really what I think this quote means, is you need to recognize the limitations of where traditional market research can be applied and how you ask questions to understand going into uncharted territory.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that explains it. That explains it very well. And I appreciate that. And for everybody listening, Ken Crutchfield is the VP and GM of Legal Markets at Wolters Kluwer. And that's, you know, one of the elements that makes you such an expert in legal is that you spend a lot of your, you know, almost all your time, like really exploring what's happening in the legal space. And we're going to get into the weeds on that in a few minutes. Would you mind just giving everybody a little bit of background leading up to your current role, and kind of also, obviously, I'd love to hear your Be That Lawyer tipping point as well.
Sure. So I've been with Wolters Kluwer for about 3.5 years. It's been a fantastic ride here, beginning to learn and relearn the legal industry that I started in basically 40 years ago as an intern when I worked for another company in the industry, LexisNexis. But I've been around, I've been in tax and accounting, I've worked with corporate, I've worked with law firms and professionals like accountants in CPA firms. And I've had a lot of opportunity to see different dimensions of business, including information and software products. I consider myself more of a software person, but there's so much going on in information today that that's really exciting too. With respect to Wolters Kluwer, I mean, we're a 5.5 billion euro company. We acquire businesses. We have strong cash flow, which are all very noteworthy in light of Silicon Valley Bank and everything else that's going on in the market today. We serve multiple industries, including health, law firms, tax and accounting, and, you know, financial and corporate risks. So there's a number of different places that we play, and we provide services that are in information products and software that really cater to professionals and expertise.
Yeah. And give us the, you know, because I know that your career trajectory changed years ago, but I think back in the 90s, and give us a little insight there and how you kind of came to be in the space.
Sure. So I'm actually doing this from Marietta, Georgia. I'm with my mom right now, just checking up that she's making some moves and going to move to Florida and having everybody come through the house and sell everything. So it's a big change for her. I had a similar sort of thing back in the 90s when I was living in Dayton, Ohio, which is really where I consider my home, childhood home growing up. And I always struggled with my career and wanting more than what, you know, frankly, Dayton had to offer. No knock against Dayton, Ohio. I love it. But my parents lived there and I had kids and I had never experienced being close to grandparents. So family was very important. One day it became clear that my parents were probably moving to Marietta and to Georgia. And I had an opportunity to really look at what was I going to do with life. And we started to rethink the problem, which is really the tipping point for me, was when I started to think that the world's small and getting on a plane is not that challenging. And we're only a couple hours away from anybody as opposed to being a 30-minute ride. So we changed our priorities, thought about our horizon. My wife and I, we were at an Italian restaurant, I remember, on our engagement anniversary. And we basically decided at that point we were going to have more kids. We were going to look for jobs outside of Ohio, and long story short, we ended up on the East Coast, and I've been on the East Coast up and down ever since, and it was the best thing we ever did, but it was really rethinking the problem from a different lens is what was so powerful to me was things that I thought were obstacles were not, and when we did that and thought about things together as a couple and really kind of planned out, we really went on a tremendous personal and professional adventure.
And it sounds like you were ahead of your time, right? I mean, it took people COVID to figure this out, and you figured it out back in the 90s.
Sometimes luck is better than being smart.
Well, very cool, man. Well, I appreciate that. And one thing that I just love about interviewing you and having conversations with you is about just your overall knowledge of the legal industry. And lawyers generally, I think, are reading, you know, this thing or that thing. They're getting bits and pieces. They're not sort of getting like a state of the union that I love to get out of you. So if you wouldn't mind, I think that's a great place to start. If you could give sort of a state of legal in the U.S., kind of where are we right now, 2023?
Sure. So when we spoke 18 months ago, it was kind of a crazy time in the middle of the pandemic and everything. Things have only gotten more complex in the world. And I think that's the first thing is to think about the backdrop of what we're dealing with. There's a term called VUCA, volatility, uncertainty, complexity, and ambiguity that really pervades everything. So we're in a world where we have inflation again. We have rising interest rates that would expect us to go into a recession, but we still have high unemployment or, you know, high employment, low unemployment. Things aren't happening the way they normally do. And we have all these other questions and issues around, you know, what's going on in the world with the Ukraine. There's just a lot of uncertainty. And then you layer that in, clients are demanding. They're more demanding. And especially if you're a large firm dealing with corporate clients, they are looking at pressures to do better, faster, cheaper, deliver return to shareholders in a tough environment. And so they're looking at every way to find efficiencies. So that's kind of the backdrop that I look at with all of this. And when you see that, there's pressure. There's pressure on firms, on individual attorneys to perform, to think, to do differently, to be better in how they operate. And those things, I think, are really key in terms of where we're going. And then you've got technology, the billable hour, and everything else. Interestingly, though, you know, because our business is to sell to law firms, especially with information that may drive value. It should drive value and does, but we look at demand and billable rates and everything, and billable rates are holding up right now in this environment. There's a lot of tension, but, you know, firms are continuing to bill out. Transactional work is, you know, maybe a little down, but overall, law firms are continuing to be strong. The demand for services because of all the uncertainty and new regulations and everything keep driving business.
And what I find interesting too, if I had to pick like one thing and maybe outside of technology, which we're going to talk about, is it seems like there are people looking for more balance and more free time and more like quality of life at the same time that you're talking about all these pressures that are coming down on law firms to be more efficient and to provide, you know, maybe faster service or more responsiveness. How are you seeing that playing out? Because I see that as a sort of a push and pull scenario.
Sure. It's definitely a trend with some of the younger generation in terms of the desire for work-life balance in new and different ways. So that's definitely, I think, something that's a cultural dynamic that has to be addressed. But I think the remote work environment and being able to, you know, balance that out by not having to commute an hour is a big deal. So those are some things that I think are a good balance. I think some of the things that changed with the pandemic of everybody is willing to go on Teams and go on camera, those sorts of things are change agents that help balance that pressure. And then there are going to be tools. I think, you know, the billable hour, I don't know if that's ever going to go away completely, but being able to have more technology applied to that pressure of being able to deliver value and results and outcome for clients that are good while balancing time and effort and not making it all about sweat of the brow and how long you work is one of those things that has got to play out.
Yeah. And maybe a good transition to, you know, really understanding how AI-driven changes in the practice of law are affecting maybe folks now and affect and maybe will in the near future. What are your thoughts on that?
Sure. I wrote at the beginning of the year that I think this is the year of AI. And I put buckets of AI, the broad large language model, ChatGPT stuff that's going on. But there's also AI that can be applied individually to, you know, data that's inside an organization that doesn't require those large language models. So we have a product, for example, that does contract analytics that go through a contract and identify clauses and extract the terms and put them into basically a database so you can search and understand what are your force majeure issues that you might have as an exposure as a corporation. How do you identify places where you might have risk if there was a data breach? Being able to do things like that and applying AI, I think, are very real, and they kind of get overshadowed by all the hype around ChatGPT. But don't lose that hype. I think the hype is real. I think this is bigger than the internet, to be quite frank. It is going to change the world in ways that we can't imagine, and it's bigger than just law. So we got to look at it from that standpoint, but then look at what do these technologies do for law? I mean, it's scary. I put in one of the times I just entered into ChatGPT. And if you haven't gone on, get an account. It's free. You can log in. You can do about 200 questions without paying anything. And I asked a question, hey, can you put together a clause for me on consequential damages? Because I don't want to have something happen that's bad if the transaction falls through. And I'm not a lawyer, but what I saw come out of it was very compelling. And then I asked it, oh, by the way, can, you know, this is going to be a contract under New York law. Does that change your answer? And it gave the very thorough answer as to what would be different. So there are very powerful things that I think you can use this technology as a starting point for things just like you would go and use an example document somewhere else. That's one of the places where I think it's good. The key is you just have to be extra due diligent about what it is you look and review and validate all the facts and information that comes out of the technology like.
Yeah. And I think it's also just, if I can flip it to like my business development space and marketing space for a moment, I mean, I've written a few articles with ChatGPT and it was giving me kind of a good answer, but a short answer. And then I asked it more specifically about a part of the answer that I wanted more detail. And it gave me like another two or three paragraphs on that. And it really helped me kind of create a more robust article that I could then, you know, use on social media, for example. So I think this also from a business development marketing standpoint could be a game changer for especially lawyers who don't like writing, where they could basically give this to an assistant or somebody who could write a really intelligent article without, you know, having the lawyer necessarily having to input it maybe more than editing it. So I think right. there's that element too.
You're absolutely right, Steve. I think more, you know, the weaknesses that attorneys have, you know, in terms of being really good at law, but, you know, needing to drive business. You know, asking marketing questions, how do I market my service? Or this is one of the things that I do really well. How should I position this on my webpage? Asking those sorts of questions are very beneficial. We've even done that internally and just said, hey, what would a marketing brochure look like for a Wolters Kluwer product? And it comes back with pretty decent starting point answers. So I think that's a good thing. It's also extremely good at summarizing or expanding. So if If you have something that's a 5-page document and you want to put an executive summary, you can ask it to do that and tell it, you know, give with the three main points and do this in less than a page, and it will do it. And, you know, that's a great starting point for attorneys who are very good at getting the comprehensiveness, but then need to come up with that summary. So there's a lot of powerful things.
Yeah, I've even used it for recreating a bio for myself, like just because it was able, I've got so much on the internet, it was able to pull and really kind of explain what I do and what my value is. And, you know, I was reading it like, wow, this is actually pretty good. Like, this is something usable for a website or usable on a LinkedIn bio or something like that.
Right. I do think it's important with these large language model things like ChatGPT and Bing and all these other places, you know, like Facebook had one called Galactica or Meta, and they pulled it after 3 days because it was spewing, you know, hate and other weird things. And so there is some uncertainty as to what's actually going on inside. So there is a strategy that one can take in terms of how you ask questions that help it explain better what it's doing so that you can know what's going on. That's particularly important because there's a concept called AI hallucinations, where AI will very confidently make up something that's not real and say it with authority, but it also doesn't have references yet in terms of it. So it can't cite to like this particular court case with the citation or to a law with the citation. I think that's coming. The latest ChatGPT-4, the GPT-4 data set just came out this week, and that is very powerful. Also, it has more training data points. There are also other things, I think, where you can actually embed code to, you know, actually exit the AI and go pull a reference. So there are things like that that are changing every day. This all was basically announced on November 30th when ChatGPT was released in beta, and we're only in the middle of March right now, and there are changes and new things every day. So by the time this publishes, there might be something new that contradicts what I just said.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. It's a constant, you know, update that we need on the technologies that are coming out in the AI. Okay, let's take a quick break to talk about how MoneyPenny is changing the game for lawyers who are losing business every day and may not even realize it. It's impossible to provide amazing client service when you have phone trees, voicemail jail, or untrained staff handling your phones. Every inbound call could be a new client to intake properly or an opportunity lost. With MoneyPenny, it's all but ensured the call will be handled exactly the way you want it every time. To take immediate action on this, write down this email and start your free trial. It's svj@moneypenny.com and just mention my name in the subject line.
With the help of Practice Panther, our office is more efficient than ever. We now provide an even higher level of service to our clients.
I've collaborated with Practice Panther for years, and I'm always hearing from happy customers just like that one. Practice Panther wants to save you up to 8 hours every week, and I want to save you money. All my listeners can get an exclusive discount, 50% off your first 3 months. Learn how your firm can boost productivity with automated workflows, custom intake, and native e-payments by visiting practicepanther.com/be that lawyer to discover more and claim this deal.
Legalese Marketing is not your traditional marketing vendor. Instead, we're a true fractional CMO that helps you save time and spend your money the right way to build the practice of your dreams. We help through the entire process, from customizing your intake system to driving leads and even getting more reviews afterwards. Schedule your free call at legalesemarketing.com.
The one that you and I talked about briefly, and you just mentioned it as well, Bing, is sort of freaking me out because that's the one where, you know, you can have a conversation and talk with it like a person. And there's been a couple of movies, you know, made about that where they become very real and very scary very fast. But the thing that really intrigued me was that there's the potential for AI to be so good with Google and with other of the main internet search engines that it could actually replace, you know, when I type in a personal injury lawyer Detroit, that instead of giving me a reference of 10, 20, 30, 40 lawyers, some who are many of who are paying top dollar for those ads, right, or to be first on Google, that it may just give a response of like, here's the one that is best. It gives you one answer, not 20. And that could change the entire model for lawyers that are, you know, spending millions of dollars on pay-per-click, for example, to bring in business.
Right. I do think that there will be a change in user experience for a lot of products where you will just talk to a product, whether it's a legal research platform or a Google style search or what could be the new Bing. Those things I think are going to be very key. And a lot of what drives those free services like a Google search is advertising. So there will have to be a rethink of how that advertising model works by those big providers, and that will flow down. I do think it will change some of that dynamic, but you know, depending on what services are free, if we want to have a free equivalent to Google that's a chat service, it's probably going to require ads still. So even if you get an answer, it might, you know, force you to watch a little commercial or something. I think when I go connect it at an airport to get the free Wi-Fi, there is an advertising model around that. I don't know what the future brings in terms of advertising models, but suffice to say, there's a lot of advertising executives that are going to be thinking about this.
Yeah. Any other thoughts on, you know, with the hype and all the kind of the movement with AI, how, you know, things may look in a year or two?
Sure. So I think that the world's going to change quickly. Law firms and lawyers need to be careful because you have to review this work. Just like if you have an associate or a paralegal doing something, you have to review it. I'm sure people have had a paralegal or somebody that's had a bad day and didn't put something together that was quite as good as one would have wanted. And, you know, there's a review. We're going to have to see the same thing with AI too. I do think that we also have to be careful because some of the things about like client confidentiality aren't completely clear yet. So I've written a little bit about examples of, you know, a large Fortune 20 company buying a major competitor. And if the investment bankers and the attorneys working the deal and the people on each side of the party are asking questions in a ChatGPT style product, is that training unintentionally the AI to know confidential information about this deal such that the journalist that stumbles onto this could ask questions and actually get information that's not public? Those are the sorts of things that aren't clear. Those will change with some of the policies around how the AI is trained. We're just in the early days, and it's very much the Wild West. So I think attorneys just need to be sure anytime you're using it, you use it on something where you're going to have a strong review. And I don't think that the man-machine hybrid really goes away. I think that these have to be viewed as tools. But at the end of the day, it's the thoughts and the training of a solid lawyer and human that can, you know, make the day.
Yeah, but it might take away, I mean, it's already doing this, but maybe take away some of the more mundane legal tasks, the doc review and the things that lawyers are getting paid to do right now, but may that, you know, just like some of the lower end jobs that have been taken over by AI or been taken over by machines, right? There's going to be some element of legal that's going to get taken over by AI.
Right. I don't think the sky is falling in any way here. I think if anything, it is going to take some of the drudgery away from certain legal tasks and from some legal positions. One of the things that I think for large firms that it's going to be interesting is how does this play out for, you know, like associates? Because a lot of the work that associates do is cut their teeth, you know, think back 20, 30 years, you know, going through discovery and looking at, you know, bankers' boxes full of documents and trying to find things out. That all went away. Everything's electronic now, and you run something that's equivalent to AI or, you know, a search technology to identify the places in discovery that are important. Then the value add occurs where the attorney actually looks and reads the things and makes some determinations. So I think that's going to play out with AI also. And I think it's, you know, you look back 100 years or so, the number of things that have happened, the workforce only gets bigger. People have moved off of farms. Women have moved into the workplace. There's more inclusive workplaces now too. Employment is continuing to go up even in this uncertain time. So I don't think that that's going to be a problem. I don't think people should be looking at the sky as falling, but it should be something that actually makes the work of a lawyer more rewarding.
Well, let's draw that into a question about what you see as maybe the two or three legal technologies that lawyers should either have or should be considering. Anything that jumps out at you outside of ChatGPT that's really making lawyers' lives better?
Yeah, I would say if an attorney isn't using a practice management system or a knowledge management system to collect all the information and make sure that they have access at their fingertips to things that they've already done or what they've said or advised a client on, That would be something that's just, you know, a basic, you know, include and do something like that. You know, there's certainly understanding and being proficient with Teams and or Zoom or other things like that. Those are kind of table stakes. But I do think over time there will be these contract review products that are going to be really solid or will help create a new contract. I think that's going to be an important thing, and it really depends on, you know, the size of the firm, what could be really powerful. But I think for, you know, smaller firms, solos, others, making sure that you've got the basics of those online capabilities and that you can do more of your work in a digital environment, that may be freeing, because you might be able to go on vacation and hang out at the beach and still complete something and do a DocuSign or complete tasks without having to be chained to a desk.
Yeah, one of my sponsors, Legalese Marketing, they do a lot of different marketing things, but the one that I really think is exciting is that they're taking a lot of the practice management systems, the Clios, the Lawmatics, et cetera, and they're providing the customization and the automation of documents, of signatures, of ACH, and automated emails to follow up, and things that are really helping take the follow up and the time away from attorneys and putting it into an automated system. Like, you were probably notified a number of times about, you know, our interview today, correct?
Yes.
Right. And then after today, when this actually launches, and, you know, when it does, you know, you're also going to get a number of automated emails saying, hey, we've got this, you know, awesome podcast to promote and to get out there. And that's all happening without me. But it happened because somebody customized the practice Lawmatics that I have to do that. So I think these are the kinds of things that are really going to allow lawyers and me in this case to focus on what we do best, which is working with clients and developing new business.
Right.
Yeah. So any other kind of final wrap-up thoughts on the state of legal and kind of where we're going before we kind of wrap up? I want to get to your game-changing book.
Sure. So I think that at the end of the day, this is just a time to be vigilant and, you know, keep sticking to what an attorney does, do it well, focus on providing customer value, and don't sweat the big picture that you can't control. Those things are happening. There are going to be technology advancements, but generally speaking, I think these technology changes that are happening are very good for attorneys who are really technology users. I don't view this as being something that we have to create something. It's how do you embrace something to make what you do and how you provide value to your customers and clients, be better so that they have better outcomes and a better experience with you as a strategic advisor.
Yeah, and I think if you're looking to build client loyalty and long-term sustainable, you know, relationships, you have to lean into the technology as a way of assisting you in that attempt of making sure that you're responsive and that you're staying in touch with people that are paying your bills and paying you quite frankly a lot of money to do the work you do, and that all is incredibly meaningful. So really great stuff. Let's talk about your game-changing book, Ken, and that is Innovator's Dilemma, which I think is the same from the quote Clayton Christensen. Is that correct? The market research?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Okay. So you pulled the quote from the book. So you really love that book.
It was a real game changer for me when I was in my career in the late 90s, and I got frustrated at large corporations who struggled with innovation. And basically, it was highlighting the idea of disruptive innovation and how that is challenging, and you have to approach it differently to be able to actually embrace. So the fear that you're going to cannibalize one's own business, if we do something when that trend is bigger than you and your business, those are the sorts of things that I really took away. And I stumbled into Clayton Christensen at a conference and heard him talking, and said, this guy is explaining exactly what I've experienced with frustration for the last 5 years. And it gave me the framework to be able to explain some of these things and say, no, we can't hide our head in the sand. We have to take action, even if that means creating like a spinoff company. I think some large law firms have done that, you know, already, where they've created little spinoff businesses that are providing services with high technology to be able to augment and play in that market. And I don't think that really plays downstream, but I think it really is one of the things where you got to look at what's going on in the market when there's something disruptive that is significant. How do you embrace it, and how do you think differently about it?
Yeah. I think if you can figure out how to solve a problem and then realize that this is a problem that a lot of people have, and you've already figured it out for one, can you figure it out for 10 or 1,000 or, 10,000? And if it's technology, especially if you can get some good help to create an app or create something around that that's going to be beneficial, it's certainly a great side hustle. It might end up being your main hustle. So,
right.
Really great stuff. Ken, thank you so much. Before we wrap up, just want to thank our sponsors, MoneyPenny. Just kicking ass as it relates to getting your phones answered with a live receptionist and making sure that you're not getting lost in your clients aren't getting lost in a phone tree. Practice Panther, the easiest way to get set up as a solo small firm on a practice management software, which we covered earlier, Ken. And then, of course, Legalese Marketing, who's in addition to helping people with their day-to-day marketing, also helping them with the innovations and the training and the automation of their practice management system. So Ken, thanks so much, man, for being on the show again. I really appreciate your wisdom and your knowledge in this area. I think this is so helpful for attorneys that are looking for the master to come in and kind of say, hey, here's the state of things when it seems like no one's really able to give it general direction.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Steve. It's great to be back on the show, and anything I can do to help or share some ideas that help people be better at what they do, that gets me up in the morning and really jazzes me. So thank you both so much.
Yeah, my pleasure. If people want to follow you or check you out, Ken, what's the best way for them to kind of find you?
Sure, they can find me on LinkedIn, or I have a regular monthly column on Above the Law. That's another place. So those would be two places that you can follow me and my thoughts.
Yep, and we'll put all that in the show notes as well. And hey, listen, thank you, everybody, for spending some time with Ken and I today. I always find him to be incredible and insightful, and absolutely he was. So, helping you to figure out whether it's technology or just understanding kind of the direction of legal, where it's going, to help you be that lawyer, someone who's confident, organized, and a skilled rainmaker. Take care, everybody. Be safe. Be well. We'll talk again soon.
Thanks for listening to Be That Lawyer. Life-changing strategies and resources for growing a successful law practice. Visit Steve's website, Fretson.com, for additional information and to stay up to date on the latest legal business development and marketing trends. For more information and important links about today's episode, check out today's show notes.